This week, the NASDAQ topped the dot-com peak recorded 15 years ago amid constructive Greek debt talks. Welcome, everyone, to another GoldSeek.com radio broadcast. Your host, Chris Waltzek, in stunned disbelief, looking at the screen here, the LCD screen, at the equities market rally. Can you remember where you were when the NASDAQ topped out in the year 2000? That's right, the dot-com boom, followed by the tragic 9/11 bust. 1.5 decades, and the entire slate has been wiped clean. Of course, that ignores the 36% loss of purchasing power due to inflation. We'll discuss this topic in greater detail. Meanwhile, the precious metals sector isn't catching the attention that it did just a few years ago. But is all that about to change? We discuss this and all of the precious metals market topicality with Bill Murphy from Gotta.org. We review the big increase in gold imports to China and India. Exports from Switzerland have doubled, and exports from the UK are up sixfold. He expects silver to soar to at least $100 in the coming years, and gold to fly to the moon. And then Gerald Celente returns to the show for a discussion on his latest trends journal. He says the foreclosure rate is up, making real estate not quite the investment that many folks expect it to be. And he always adds substance to the show with his in-depth geopolitical outlook. And we'd like for you to record your questions and comments via our new toll-free hotline. You can call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Leave your first name or remain anonymous if you prefer. The Q&A hotline, 1-206-666-6653-70. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with the market weather recap. Well, mostly cloudy skies appeared over the precious metals sector this week as investors favored U.S. equities over competing assets. At Friday's closing bell on the New York COMEX exchange, gold was off $24, about 2%, ending at $11.79 an ounce. Silver was off about 53 cents, ending at $15.72 an ounce, while the XEU Gold and Silver Equities Index was off about a point, 1.4%, ending at around $70. West Texas Intermediate crude was off just 0.5%, ending at $57.42 per barrel, well off those bear market lows. Well, the top story driving the markets this week was the U.S. stock market rally. The NASDAQ climbed to the highest point on record, stronger than expected U.S. durable goods orders indicated underlying economic strength. The index eclipsed the March 2000 dot-com peak. Investors' passion for equities continues to draw funds away from the safe havens, but even the U.S. dollar and housing were sluggish this week. Plus, investors chose the sidelines ahead of next week's FOMC meeting. Meanwhile, Fed officials dismissed rate hikes in the spring, but a June increase is still on the table. But given this week's sluggish new home sales figures, the Dubs may remain in control. The two-day meeting will yield a statement next Wednesday. The current consensus of economists points to a rate hike the September FOMC meeting. In related news, neutral headlines over the Greek debt drama continues to weigh heavily on safe haven assets. Investors feel more confident that the issues will be resolved between debtors and Greek officials. However, the lull may be the eye of the storm, as the markets may have already discounted an inevitable default. Precious metals, bottom line. Little has changed in the precious metals sector right now. Not too many positive signs of a bottom just yet. But still, long-term investors are encouraged to accumulate on weakness in anticipation of much higher prices in the coming years. Moving on to the Wall Street Report. Well, it was Thursday of this week. The NASDAQ finally topped the dot-com peak, closing at 5,056.06 on Thursday. The NASDAQ composite hit a new high, surpassing the old record of 5,048.62, reached on March 10th, 2000, during the dot-com craze. Well, nothing but sunny skies were seen over the New York Stock Exchange on Friday. One day earlier, on Thursday, the NASDAQ finally topped the dot-com peak, closing above it for the first time in 15 years. At 5,056, the NASDAQ composite continued higher on Friday, surpassing all records. The Dow Jones Industrials adding 160 points for the week, up 3.3%, finishing at 50.92, while the Dow Jones Industrials also added a sizable amount, 253 points, about 1.5%. 1.5%, ending at 17,763. The S&P 500 ended at 21,17, up 37 points, a new record, almost 2%. Well, the technology sector led the way forward this week. In an amazing show of internal strength, the blue chip stocks flew higher, including one of my best alpha stock newsletter picks, Amazon.com, surged 15% higher to an all-time high, its revenues beating estimates. Google also gained around 5% on the heels of quarterly results, while Microsoft leapt nearly 10%, topping analysts' earnings estimates. The S&P 500 components are expected to have some sluggish earnings. Nevertheless, the S&P 500 index didn't get the memo. It also blasted to a new record high. While elsewhere, merger talks between Time Warner Cable and Charter Communications led the shares of the former stock higher by about 5%, according to a Bloomberg report. The report also showed that Comcast had dropped its earlier bid, $45 billion bid, with Time Warner. Bottom line on Wall Street. Well, our 7-indicator sentiment index did also blast into the greedy zone. Now, that's not typically the type of sign you'd like to see on a breakout. Usually, you'd see investor fear relatively high on a breakout, as the herd tends to miss the big moves while the deep pockets remain cool-headed and fully invested. Not so this time. So I think it'll be interesting to see if the Fed throws Wall Street a curveball next Wednesday. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio with our top guests, Bill Murphy and Gerald Celente. We'd like for you to stay with us right here at GoldSeek. Bill Murphy is at the helm of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, GATA, with Chris Powell working on behalf of all investors. Welcome back, Bill Murphy.
Great to be back, Chris. Thank you.
India's gold imports are reportedly going to rise substantially this year. According to one inside report, they're showing that there was considerably larger imports last month relative to previous years. Two reasons they're citing for this. Firstly, the Reserve Bank of India has eased many of those curbs and restrictions that have been placed, duties, taxes, and whatnot, because, you know, they're trying to resolve the issue with the rupee, and gold and oil are such important primary imports into their country that they're convinced this is going to solve it. There's a new party in power, and they're promising to lift the curbs, and we're seeing a surge in imports. Do you think this is an important piece of the maybe recovery story that we might have for the precious metals?
Well, everybody knows India is such a big buyer of gold, and anything that can increase imports is tremendous because they're such big buyers. What gets me, of course, is, you know, so you've had this increase in demand from India, and so what? The price goes down. It doesn't make any difference when the gold cartels out there just suppressing the price. Just these are facts. It's like we get all this talk about China and all the buying that's going on there. So what?
We just heard this week that gold imports climbing in China to 46 metric tons in March, the largest they've had on record. According to Swiss leaders, their customs there in Switzerland, shipments to India more than doubled, and imports from the UK climbed now sixfold. But, you know, apparently there's more to this story than just supply and demand. We also have that paper money fiasco that folks have been worried about for over a decade. Any thoughts?
Where GATA comes from. No one's saying, where is all the supply coming from? You know, and of course, I've been saying it for years, and it seems to be just as bad as ever, that the gold cartel, these bullion banks, are flooding the market to make sure the price doesn't go up. And when it comes to the paper market, in the end, it's the physical market, because every day there's a PM fix, and that's, if you want to sell gold, that's what you sell at the PM fixed price, which, in fact, is, you know, you can relate it, you know, to the paper market, but at the end of the day, if the physical market was that strong, the paper market would influence, the paper guys would get stuffed, but that never happens. They are able to influence the price via, and by the way, they are doing it via the derivatives, via the futures markets and stuff, but it has such an either psychological effect or real effect. At the end of the day, the physical price is what it is at the PM fix. That's where 90% of the contracts are consummated at.
And I don't know if this metaphor has been used before, but Pompeii, Mount Vesuvius. There had been rumblings and ramblings. The mountain had been sending off ash. Only a few of the wisest people took heed. And then the final moment came, and I presume thousands of people were trapped in their homes, and we see that now from antiquity in the museums all over the world. It makes one wonder, with the instantaneousness of our global economy today, whether or not we as investors might someday, those who don't heed the warnings of Gatta and other folks, might face their own Mount Vesuvius, their own Pompeii moment, where there's no time to get in the boats and scramble out of here. The ash is already filling the skies and the rooms, and people are just caught flat-footed. Any thoughts?
Well, it's a good point. Yes, absolutely. I think that's what's coming. It's the change of when this, what we call the gold cartel hits the wall and is unable to come up with the physical gold anymore and silver to meet their scheme to pull it apart. All of a sudden, you're liable to have an incredible shortage that happens overnight, and it creates an effect one after other when counterparties can't deliver, and you get a buying panic, and all of a sudden the prices could go, you know, bananas. But they will have to hit the wall before that happens. Right now, there's no sign of it. I mean, of course, as you just said, there won't be any sign, and all of a sudden you'll have a Titanic moment and things will change.
There was an interesting article today in Bloomberg News regarding the Fed chair, the latest FOMC meeting minutes, and I thought it was really well written by two analysts who point out that all this rhetoric and worry and confusion about higher rates, the Fed, they want everyone to think that the zero or even negative rates is coming to a close. And yes, they'll probably raise rates a pittance, a small amount. But in reality, they know, and we should know, and their colleagues are pretty much hinting to, that the monetary policy, it's going to remain business as usual. That if they were to tighten, any this so-called recovery would simply unravel and the whole edifice would come tumbling down. It could be one of those moments where investors are sitting on their hands waiting for a little mini panic in the metals markets to unfold, and then it's just the strong hands come in with both fists and buy up the market and won't sell at any price for the next 5 or 10 years.
Well, sure, could happen. You know, right now, this whole interest rate thing is a joke in the sense of other assets are moving up because of it, you know, of zero rates to negative rates. You know, talk about art and real estate in certain areas and many other things, diamonds. And yet, especially the last 4 years, if you'd have said what was going to happen to rates, you would have said gold and silver would be leading the way. But, of course, this is what this gold cartel has done, is to destroy them and take all the psychology out of the market, and they've done it on purpose. So here we are in the weeds where other assets are flying, including stock markets all over the world today. Those in gold and silver are suffering, especially silver, and it's all been done on purpose. Is it all going to change? Oh, yes, big time. But until they hit the wall, it's what we have to deal with.
I think that another important aspect here that people are ignoring is just what's going on in the Eurozone. You know, this Grexit, as they call it, or Greek exit, appears to be inevitable at this point. I mean, there's always a chance that they'll resolve things, but ultimately could be one of the first dominoes to fall that might just lead to a chain reaction, at least in that part of the world. And we all know how closely tied the global economy is. Local issues can become systemic overnight.
Well, the issues are there, but look, the markets could care less. With European markets, the Asian markets, our stock markets are doing. There's not really much concern about it. They'll come up, they'll kick the can down the road, find a way to smooth it all over. It won't fix the problem, but that's the way everything is done these days. So eventually, is it going to be a huge mega deal? Yes. But, you know, where's the concern in the markets today? There isn't any.
We've struggled here for 3 or 4 years. That's normal. 12 years, greatest bull market in the history of mankind that I can think of. Sure, there's got to be some steam let off, and it's a longer period than we thought. The institutions are looking elsewhere. They're all scrambling over themselves to buy up the latest hot stock so that investors get turned on to their portfolio. To me, that's just penny wise, pound foolish. It's not seeing the forest for the trees. It's not using, you know, it's myopic. The wise person here is accumulating on every dip. I mean, it's just such an incredible opportunity. And looking for the longer term picture, sure, you should have some stocks. You should have some bonds. I wouldn't have too many. Not at these valuations. I'm sure you probably agree. Any thoughts?
Well, you know, I think you've got the biggest move in history of markets coming up when this all blows up. But how long is it going to take for us to get there? We don't know. I mean, it's one disturbing bit of market action after another. One thing I focus on and my thing, the bearish signal for years has been the silver open interest being so high. It's at all-time highs, and it keeps going up. It just went up again. It's been a bearish signal for 4 years. Silver acts like it has an anchor around it. It couldn't act worse. And yet, you know, I'm a $100 silver fan in the sense that that's where I think it's going. But until we hit this wall here, it's brutal. And the problem is for people that are, you know, it's great if you can sit back and just accumulate, and you're so right. But for money managers and people that have to compete against each other, it makes it very difficult to not be a part of what's going on. You know, I think like you do of what's coming, but in the meantime, it's just tough. So it's, you have to suck it up and think big picture like you're talking about, but keep looking for a sign for a change, and we just haven't seen it.
But, you know, there are some opportunities for folks interested in the sector, perhaps, who need that income. You know, we had a friend of yours and of the show, Mr. John Embrion, last week from Sprott Asset Management. He shared four of his favorite stocks, two of which are very well-known blue chips. I think you can call them blue chips. I mean, they throw off some really fine dividend yields. One of them, I believe, was Gold Corp, GG, and another one was Agnico Eagle, the top pick of our late friend, Mr. Bob Chapman, as well. So, I mean, these are opportunities. Here you have the opportunity to benefit from individual company expansion, improvement in their operations, as well as the dividend, which is a plus for your portfolio. And then you have the gold play as well. And then you have the leverage that comes with gold companies. Should be a component add into everybody's portfolio. Are you still looking at the miners? Are you waiting?
Oh, yeah, Chris. I mean, I think you're absolutely correct. I mean, it's interesting. The HUI has made this huge rounded bottom, and it's correction lows, at least for at the moment, as of today, it's for the seventh time it's made a higher low on a correction. It's really, if you look at a chart, it's really something. It keeps making a higher low, and I think the shares, again, are going to make the biggest moves in history. It's a question of what's going to be the catalyst to set it off. So, yeah, I'm gung-ho to be in the shares, and, you know, again, a gung-ho for buying gold and silver down here, absolutely. But it's just a very, you know, facts are facts. It's a very difficult time, and you have to do what you're talking about, is think longer term and big picture when everything will change. Because I don't want your followers to think I'm negative. I'm not.
It's reminiscent of the dot-com implosion. If you look at the NASDAQ and the Dow and the rest, but really the NASDAQ circa 2002, 2003, I mean, if you even mentioned Ask Jeeves, people would just say, what are you thinking? Well, if you look at the XAU, we've got to be back close to a decade, just wiped out.
As I look back at where the XAU was when I started my commentary in 1998, same price.
We can't promise anybody that the bottom is here, but it's time to start thinking strategically as a contrarian. In general, most of us don't know which end is up when it comes to the market. All right. Any other topicality I've missed today?
No, I think, again, it's the big picture is there. And this is just, you can see, you know, we talk about the gold cartel. It's a god of thing, but it's never been more obvious in all the years we've been dealing with what they're doing to the gold and silver markets and what they're trying to create. And it's something very difficult to deal with. So, but at least by understanding it and knowing what's going on and how artificially low the prices of gold and silver are right now, you can deal with it. So while, again, it's a tough time, when you know what's happening and why, it's going to lead to the kind of things you're talking about. And the returns are going to be, as I think, bigger than any time in history. It's just we've got to get from here to there.
Just a return to the mean on any of these indexes, which markets have a tendency to revert to the mean. The pendulum usually swings back, but we don't even need that for you to make 50 to 100% on your investment here. So just a great opportunity. All right. Bill Murphy at Gata.org and La Metropole Cafe. Why don't you give folks some contact information and tell them about the services you provide, please?
Sure, Chris. They can go to www.gata.org and get on our Gata's list, which Chris Powell does a great job with, and they can go to lametropolecafe.com and sign up for a 2-week free trial, and see if what I am putting out there is of value.
We appreciate all you do. Please come back.
Thank you.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Gerald Celente, director of the Trends Research Institute with the Trends Journal, latest copy sitting right here on the desktop. Welcome back, Gerald Celente.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, let's start off today with your latest Trends Journal. You say Americans are the most manipulated people in history, and you back it with some substance. You say since 2008, the economy has been manipulated for the big banks, too big to fail. I say too big to bail. Foreign policy has been manipulated, and it's all coming to a focal point between us, Russia, and China. And I agree with you. Tell us more, please.
Yes. By the way, that was written by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, who's a contributor to the Trends Journal. And, of course, he was the former Assistant Treasury Secretary under Ronald Reagan. And he's been around, knows what it looks like. There's a lot of experience. And there's no one out there that I respect more for geopolitical and economic insights than Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. And he makes it very clear. Let's start with the bankism, as we call it, one of the top trends as well. And this is not capitalism. In capitalism, there's no such thing as too big to fail. There are no such thing as bailouts and tax breaks for your buddies. So when you look at it, for example, just making the news now, former head of the Federal Reserve, the chairman, Ben Bernanke, who under his regime pumped trillions of dollars into central banks around the world and other banks to prop up their failures following the panic of 08, he just got a job with a $25 billion a year hedge fund. Hey, son of a gun, huh? Hey, did you see that guy that played the governor of Massachusetts? Hey, you know Massachusetts, where Mitt Romney used to hang out? Son of a gun. Guy joined up with Mitt Romney, the governor, former governor of Massachusetts. Let's make this clear. This is not a revolving door. It's one door. It's the corporate door. They're in charge. They're running the show. And then you go on to the media and what they're promoting, or the prostitutes that promote the propaganda. Who owns them? Well, thanks to Bill Clinton, only a handful, about six, control 90% plus of all of the media in the United States when he deregulated the Federal Communications Act back in 1996. So what do we hear? Every time you hear the word, for example, now that what's going on in Yemen with the Houthis, they always throw the line in there, the Iranian-backed Houthis. Even though Iran denies it, the Houthis deny it, and there's no proof of anything. But that's okay. We'll keep saying it so everybody can believe it.
Grand manipulation, as you all refer to it. It's essentially a Ponzi scheme where government debt is simply issued and everybody seems to find some cheap money. Everybody, but the mom and the pops and the everyday folks, the middle class, the working classes, everybody at the top. And you've got the too big to fail. Give us an idea of why their mistakes could soon become our mistakes.
Well, because the whole, everybody that's in the business that wants to tell it straight knows what it is. And you mentioned it. You get all this cheap money. And the reality is you go over to Europe. Now you have negative interest rates. So what are they doing? I mean, you can't make this stuff up. So what are they doing? All of these hedge funds, all these private equity groups, all these investment capitalists. And by the way, those are just nice words for big-time gamblers, are borrowing money for nothing, doing deals and speculating. And then let's look at the other half of the rise of the equity markets. Big companies borrowing money for nothing and buying back their stock and driving up the prices. So you said it, it's one big Ponzi scheme, and we're not in it. Because when you look at the data just coming out, for example, hey, you see that new foreclosure rate up 20% over last year. That's called a recovery, isn't it? Yeah, so what they're recovering from is their addiction by them feeding them more of their monetary methadone through negative interest rates. Hey, listen, you know, Chris, we've been doing this show a long time, and you're a nice guy. I got a deal for you. We're selling bonds. I'm going to call myself Switzerland to Germany, and you're going to buy this bond from me. Let's play Switzerland for right now. And you're going to cash it in 10 years. And because you're such a nice guy, I'm going to guarantee you less money than you loaned me. Just sign on the line.
I got one word for you. Nuts.
And that's what's going on. Five-year bonds in Germany, 10-year bonds in Greece, over 20% of the European bonds with negative yields. Just to make it clear, just to make it 100% clear, it's never been done in the history of the world, part one or part two.
This fiat money scam has been going on. You're talking 2,000 years, and Gerald Celente just said it right here on the show. We've reached a whole new level never seen before.
Never seen before, right in front of our eyes. So again, then the media manipulates it. That's why it's part of the grand manipulation. So it could be on geopolitics, on these business shows that keep propping up the lie. And every now and then they spew the truth. This guy Yardini, yeah, every now and then he slipped up and he said the game is rigged. But he said, but I love the central bank. That's Ed Yardini. Anybody could look it up on CNBC a while ago. But I love the central bank. What is he? Is that the central bank he's in love with?
Now, according to the Trends Journal, we just can't back down from Russia and China. Those two are actually doing pretty well, at least on paper. They're trying to get out of debt and accumulate precious metals and keep their workforce, you know, and their economy growing. Over there, there's a big housing bubble about to burst.
Let's talk about, first of all, before we go into the economics of it, and staying on with the prostitutes reporting of it, look at the aggression of China. I think they invaded Libya. No, I don't think they did. I think they had to take out about 30,000 people. The United States did that. The Peace Prize winner, you remember him. And if only the women were in charge, Hillary Clinton, Samantha Powers, and Susan Rice, now in Washington, that pushed for the war. It's not about race, creed, or color, or gender. It's about people. Tired of hearing. It's not about race, creed, or color. So China, no, I don't think they did invade Libya. I think it was Iraq. No, I don't think that was Iraq. I don't think that was China either. And then look at Russia. Russia was the ones that called the end of Kerry's madness and Obama's to bomb Syria when they showed that they were lying about the so-called chemical weapons. And then you see in the news now this guy Richard Engel with NBC. They made up a story. They lied about when they said he was kidnapped by Assad's troops, and they weren't. He wasn't. I guess he must have been in the same helicopter as the other NBC guy, Brian Williams, in Iraq, that was being shot at. Oh, it wasn't being shot at. You have to tie it all together, whether it's geopolitics or economics. And then when you talk about, again, the threats from Russia and China, how many times have you heard, Chris, about Russian tanks, Russian troops, and Russian artillery moving into East Ukraine? How many photos have you seen? Not one in this day of selfies. But yet, as I was talking before about Yemen, here's the poorest country, one of the poorest countries in the world, being attacked by Saudi Arabia, one of the richest ones, and they have footage of the Houthis defeating the Saudis in this outpost. But yet we have no footage coming from Ukraine showing us proof that Russia is involved in this.
I'd like to shift from the geopolitical. Let's look at the domestic economy. And you crunch the numbers in the latest Trends Journal. You talk about this interesting paradox where we have one of the best employment numbers since the credit crisis of 2008, around 5.6% unemployment, allegedly. I'm using quotes. You can't see it here. But then there's the U3 number, which we all know John Williams is publishing over at Shadow Stats, which is just the government's previous method. And the U6 method, and they're showing at least 11.2% unemployment. Somebody's not telling it like it is here. They wouldn't make very good umpires at the Little League games. So let's figure out what's going on, okay? Are these all discouraged workers? Is half of the workforce discouraged? Or are we all just so rich here in America, Gerald, we don't need to work?
When I talk about the manipulation and the people that do it, I talked about Clinton, who deregulated the communications industry, besides, of course, the Glass-Steagall Act, and all those people out there that love GMO foods. That's Clinton. But also, he was the guy that rigged the employment numbers, the unemployment numbers. Started under him. It began in earnest under him. So now when we're looking at the numbers, let's put this into perspective. The numbers were lousy for January and February because it was terrible weather. It was lousy. It was cold, and people weren't going out. But March's numbers came out. Unemployment number, or the new employment numbers, were half of what Wall Street had anticipated. And then you look at where there's growth, and they show it in the retail sector, for example. Now, when you look at Target closing stores, Radio Shack, Sears, JCPenney, and the retail numbers all being down, how can there be growth in these fields? What are we missing here? And then you look at the so-called quality of the jobs. They're lousy quality. Again, go back to Bill Clinton. Why? Well, how about NAFTA? That's the jobs that used to be the routine jobs that people had on assembly lines and other kind of jobs that weren't outsourced have been outsourced.
Oh, that's gone. You know, you're talking 600,000 of those prime jobs a year over a 10-year period, actually more than 10 years. It's something to the tune, I've read, of 5 or 6 million jobs at least that we've lost.
And you look at where the growth has been made up. It's almost a parallel. In healthcare, ambulatory services, people making nothing. That's where it's been made. So then you go back to Pew Research studies that show, for example, that the gap between the rich and the poor right now is worse than it was during the Gilded Age. You have the median household income right now is below 1999 levels. And then again, you know, we were talking earlier about China. And look at the AIIB, the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, that now has 57 founding members. And they're going to have a bigger budget than the World Bank. Now, of course, you have to put this into perspective. The United States is still the major reserve currency of the world. It used to account for about 80%, you know, about 15 years ago. Now it's down to 63%. The euro used to account for much more. Now it's down to about 22%. China still has a very small percent, under 3% with the yuan. But you can see where the trend is going. Now think of the name Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. Infrastructure. That's where the money's going to it. China spends on average about 8.5% of its GDP on infrastructure. All of us people living here in the rotted United States of America with its lousy roads and its third world rail and it's, you fly into JFK from coming from another country, it's a disgrace when you're overseas in Asia or Europe and then fly into here. We spend the grand total on infrastructure of 0.065% annually. So the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank is anathema to Americans because infrastructure doesn't count. You see, the business of China is business, and the business of America is war.
Well, you know, it worked so well for Japan. For to give them some credit, the government worked closely with business because they knew the global competition was intense. And then all of society, for the most part, the small entrepreneur, I admit, suffers. The society benefited from that. And then now that started to cave. Well, we're seeing that in the United States. Just the top corporations benefiting.
It goes back to the Bill Clintons, the Jimmy Carters, the Ronald Reagans. They're all in bed together. Look at the disgrace. This isn't even a two-party system. It's a two-family system. That we have the Clintons and the Bushes. I haven't had enough of these people in my life. America? Spoil it with a K.
And let's talk about some more of the topicality from the Trends Journal. Give me an idea of where we're headed next with all of this.
There's going to be a crash that's worse than the panic of 08. It's a global crash because it's global. You have China dumping cheap dough into their system. You look at their numbers. They're way off in GDP, in exports, in imports. Look what I mentioned about what's going on in Europe with their negative interest rates. It's the entire world is they're pumping up their economies with fake money. At some point, this Ponzi scheme is going to, as they all do, end. And that's why people ask me, am I still bullish on gold? And as I would say to you, Chris, I just made you an offer a little earlier on to buy a 10-year Swiss bond, and you're guaranteed to get less money back in 10 years than today. Do you think that gold prices are going to be lower in 10 years than today?
I mean, it's a sure bet.
That's where we're at. Again, I don't gamble. I buy for possession. I buy it for my gold is for my golden years. I've been buying gold. My first buy of gold, it's on record, $187.50 an ounce, 1978. But I've been buying it so when you average it out, and I bought it up at $1,100. I bought it at $1,800. But I've been buying it all those years.
And the long-term, you know, regression line is sloping up.
Exactly. When you average it out, I'm way ahead of the game. I'm sure glad I didn't buy Chrysler stock or Bethlehem Steel. So when you look at it, and then you look what's going on in Yemen. This is a big story, and it's not being covered by the media. We had the Saudi ambassador 3 weeks ago announce from Washington, D.C., the people's capital, that the Saudis were going to invade Yemen. And the United States is right in bed with this. What a disgrace. What's Riyadh's not good enough for him? Do it at home. But I'm saying this because if there is an attack against the Saudis, the oil fields, against the monarchy, this is going to be worse than Iraq, Libya, and Syria. And you're already looking at the spike of oil prices already, and some of it reflects this. They have no business going in there. They're propping up a government, the Hadi government, who was put in place after the Arab Spring when they threw out Saleh, who was also backed by the United States, that was in office since, about 1990. And this guy was the vice president. They propped him up. He ran in an election that they put a ticket out with nobody else running against him. It was overthrown. He resigned. And now they're trying to prop him back up. It's none of our business. Remember the USS Cole. It was blown up in the port of Aden in Yemen.
One final question for you that's on our listeners' minds. It's on all of our minds, I think. Are you buying the housing recovery mantra, or is this just smoke and mirrors?
You're not looking at strong growth. You're looking at moderate growth, and the important numbers to look at are new home buyers. and that number is hitting historic lows. That's because the people between the ages of 25 and 35 have lousy jobs. And you're looking at the multifamily dwellings going up more, and that's what they're living in, and tiny little places. So your market that used to account for some 46% of new home sales were first-time home buyers, that number's down to around 26%. So as long as young people are making lousy wages, you're not going to see the spike in housing.
As you say, you know, the job growth is such a key point. If people feel secure and there's ample alternative jobs or career paths to them, but right now people are just struggling. Something around 60 to 70% of people living from paycheck to paycheck. That's not a scenario that favors higher housing.
No, it's not.
And let's look at the St. Louis Fed numbers. If you dive into the numbers there recently, you can see that the trend turned over around 2008 for home occupancy rates turned downward, where folks just simply are not, on the whole, choosing the housing option. They're going the way of the rental.
Because they can't afford to buy them. It goes back to the jobs. And then one more thing just to add into that. Look at the number coming, mentioned the St. Louis Fed, check the number coming out from the Atlanta Fed, where they're looking at GDP growth in this first quarter to be around 0.2%.
Why don't you tell folks more about the Trends Journal?
Oh, the Trends Journal, and we have a Trends Monthly. The Trends Journal is a quarterly. We have a Trends Monthly. Each night we do Trends in the News. Our website is trendsresearch.com. We have a conference coming up here in June 6th in Colonial Kingston, New York, in our historic 1774 Academy. So there's a lot there. Go to trendsresearch.com. It's the only place where you're going to get history before it happened. Thank you.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Gold and silver are both up about 10% already in 2014. Jim Rogers joins us from his office in Singapore with his outlook on the sector and related economic vantage point. Good morning, Jim Rogers.
I am delighted to be here. How are you this morning?
Thank you for asking. We're kind of shoveling through the last of this nor'easter here on the East Coast, but I don't think that's something you all have to worry about too much in Singapore.
Well, Singapore's on the equator, so it's either always hot or hot and rainy. And if it's raining, it's not going to rain. It's not going to rain long. It's going to be hot again soon.
Well, we're looking forward to some of that warm weather. Well, let's begin with the markets here. You know, last week, the precious metals posted an impressive rally on news of the floundering domestic economic recovery and the plunging U.S. dollar. Investors added some precious metals investments on also on comments from the new Fed head, Dr. Yellen, in her first testimony to Congress. As head of the Fed, she noted that the central bank could reduce the pace of assets purchasing mortgage-backed securities. You know, they've already cut twice now, back-to-back, another $10 billion at the March meeting.
Well, no, they will continue on the path that they have stated until there's a lot of pain in the market, and then they will panic, and then they will give in, and then they will stop cutting back. Everybody will sigh. Will heave a sigh of relief and say, oh, it's going to be okay. The markets will then rally, and that will probably be the final big rally. I mean, that may not be till 2015 or 16. I don't know. I'm just saying that that's my view of how they will proceed. You got to remember, Chris, you know, these are bureaucrats. That's why they work for the government. They don't have much experience, so they will panic and then give in.
You know, that's certainly been a page right out of their playbook, adding liquidity and stimulus to the system every time the economy has a cold. Unfortunately, it looks like that policy doesn't have the punch it used to have.
No, of course it doesn't, especially given the fact that the debt is now so much higher. When you do something like that, when the economies are smaller and the debt situation is smaller, or the money that has been printed is smaller, the bigger it gets, the more you have to pump. And that's why it's working less and less and less.
Well, let's shift over to the precious metals. You know, the Indian gold curve significantly lowered global gold demand. China picked up a lot of that demand. As their middle class becomes more and more affluent, their propensity and appetite for the yellow metal and related precious metals investments in jewelry seems to be making up for it. But now there's some talk that Indian officials seeing strength in the rupee, so they're less concerned about these restrictions on gold imports. And that could boost demand sometime later in this year.
For months, how stunned I was that nobody in the U.S. investment community even knew what was going on in India. There's an election coming, Chris, so Indian politicians will do everything they can to pander to the voters. No question. One of those things may be to, you know, try to remove some of the restrictions on gold. I wouldn't be too optimistic that it will last, but it depends on who's going to win. You know, after the election, the problems are not going away. The Indian problems are their balance of trade, their deficit, et cetera, but they may certainly do something before the election to get more votes.
You've also gone on record that gold could drop to $1,000 an ounce before finding a firm bottom. Goldman Sachs analysts, they share your sentiments. Has the price action, though, in the past couple of months maybe changed your outlook? Are you still somewhat skeptical?
Well, there was a gigantic short position in gold earlier this year, and that would probably lead to a rally. At least it nearly always does. When it's a big short position in anything, it often leads to a rally. So that's what's happened. We had this gigantic short position. We have had and are having the rally. Is the bear market, is the correction in gold over? I have no idea. People should listen to Gold Seek Radio to get an answer to that. I'm just watching. I suspect there will be another chance to buy gold, but I certainly have not sold any gold, as I've told you many, many times, and don't plan to sell my gold until it turns into the eventual bubble that it probably will someday.
For our listeners who might be curious, when you talk about the large short position, I'm assuming from your comments you might be referring to the Commitment of Traders report on gold, maybe the commercials, and some of the insiders had a large short position there, net short?
Yes. I'm talking about the Commitment of Traders. It's published every week in the U.S. And, you know, normally when you see the quote speculators very big on one side of a market, the market usually goes the other way.
And then on your comments of a speculative fervor at some distant point in the future, there's always conjecture on this topic, but one of the more level-headed analysts that we really appreciate, like yourself on the show, is John Williams at ShadowStats, has established quite a reputation as well. He'd always been talking about the threat of hyperinflation, but now he's calling for it as soon as this year because he fears a dollar collapse.
A hyperinflation in the U.S. in 2014?
Due to a dollar collapse.
Well, John is a smart guy, and I certainly admire him. And whenever I see something by him, I read it to see what he's saying. I would be skeptical that there's a dollar collapse in 2014, but anything is possible. My goodness, there's enough madness going on in Washington and in other parts of the world, so why not? I happen to be long the U.S. dollar at the moment, so I'm not expecting it this year. I do it. The reason I'm long the U.S. dollar is because there's going to be a lot more turmoil in the world in the next year, two, three. And normally, or often, when there's a lot of turmoil, people flee to the U.S. dollar because they think it is, quote, a safe haven. It is not a safe haven, as you know, Chris. But many people think it is, so that's where they will go. So I'm long the dollar. I don't expect it to collapse this year. But who knows? Anything can happen. I mean, if war breaks out or even more madness comes out of Washington, anything can happen.
Take a look at what's happening in Argentina. You know, we're looking at over a 50% increase in inflation as the peso continues to slide, and there seems to be considerable currency troubles and woes in the emerging markets. So, you know, you would expect folks to flee to more stable currencies like the U.S. dollar and the treasury.
I just said it's perceived as a stable place to be or a safe place. No, no, the U.S. dollar is the U.S. is the largest debtor nation in the history of the world, and the debts are going higher and higher and higher. But there are many more problems in other parts of the world, too. It's not that the U.S. is stable or the dollar is stable or the treasuries are stable. It's just that they're perceived to be or they're perceived to be less bad. I certainly did not suggest that the U.S. dollar is a sound currency or a stable situation.
That's duly noted. Thank you. And, you know, the threat of bail-ins is another issue. Pension confiscations, things of that nature, beginning with Cyprus, you might say, moving further north to some of the other neighbors there in the EU. And now some concerns here with legislation, even in the United States, that our private funds might be at risk from government confiscation and other machinations. You went on record recently noting that you're somewhat concerned about pension plan confiscation and that you are making some preparations of your own.
Well, I'm sure it's going to happen. It's already happened. You mentioned Cyprus. It wasn't pensions. It was bank accounts. The EU banking authorities have already made it possible for the governments to take people's bank accounts. Federal Reserve has also made it possible in their regulations that in a desperate situation that they too will confiscate people's bank accounts or the money from people's bank accounts to save the banks. They've decided that the banks are more important than the individuals and their money. So yes, it's going to happen. It's happened I think Poland has already confiscated some of the pension plans. Other countries are preparing to confiscate pension plans. So, yeah, it's certainly going to happen in the U.S. There have been bills introduced in Congress already making it possible and setting up the way it will be done. So, no, it's certainly going to happen when things get difficult. In the 1930s, they confiscated everybody's gold to save what they said was to save the financial system. Well, gold's not part of the monetary system now as it was in the 1930s, so this time they will confiscate the pension plan. Besides, there's a lot more money in pension plans than there is in gold.
You know, another threat to retirees, folks on fixed income, inflation combined with low rates of return on their investments. This is something you've talked about recently, that you're concerned that the savings class on a global scale is being jeopardized or is threatened by duality of inflation and low returns on their money. And, you know, it almost appears as though investors are forced to gamble excessive risks at a time when they really should be lowering their risk exposure. Any thoughts?
Investing class is not being threatened. They're being destroyed, Chris. All those people who did everything right or what has traditionally been considered right saved their money. They didn't go deep into debt. They didn't buy five or six houses with no money down. They're now getting wiped out to save the people who did it the wrong way. The people who saved up their money are now getting no return on it and are being totally destroyed because this has been going on for some time. And the way the government is stalking, it's going to continue for a while. So this is not good for any of us. People, everybody, not just me, but everybody is looking for a way to get a proper return without too much risk. Unfortunately, many people are taking more and more risk, and often that leads to problems down the road.
You know, stocks are certainly the trade of the year for 2013. The streets are still lined, I think, with bear carcasses. However, one prominent firm recently announced it's doubling its bearish bet that the S&P 500 is headed for a fall. According to the latest 13F filings, apparently there's some big risks emerging in China that could lead to an equities meltdown circa 2008. I'd like your thoughts on the equities market.
Well, there are many equities markets, as you know, and many of them have already had meltdowns. If you go to Turkey or some Indonesia or other places, you'll see that there have already been big meltdowns in some countries. And China, the stock market is down. Its all-time high was in 2008. It's down nearly 70 from there. It could go down more. There's nothing to prevent any market from having more collapse. There are debt problems in China, just as there are debt problems all over the world. I don't know where the next spark will come from. What usually happens in any market is the marginal players start having problems first, and then that spreads to more and more people. We are already having some marginal players having problems, and it is will undoubtedly spread to more and more people. Whether the meltdown is this year or, as I said earlier, what I expect is that the Federal Reserve will continue to cut back. Other central banks are not cutting back, but eventually that will lead to problems in the markets over the next, sometime in the next few months. Then the Federal Reserve and other central banks will panic. We'll have then a big, big rally will come. I would suspect that that would be the last rally before we have the big collapse, I think was the word you used. But I don't know whether that'll be 2014, 15, or 16. It just depends on how things unfold. You mentioned earlier that the dollar may collapse this year. Well, if that happens, the equity markets around the world are going to collapse this year, too.
You always seem to be forward-looking. Give folks a glimpse into the future of what Jim Rogers sees on the horizon, please.
Well, that's a very good question. I'm mainly watching at the moment. I haven't stumbled across anything totally new. I mean, I think we may have discussed that I'm looking for investments in Russia. I am look, you know, the Chinese had the government had a huge meeting in November, and which they say is one of the three most important things in China in the past 35 years to decide which industries they're going to focus on. Well, I'm looking at those industries too, on the theory that if the Chinese government is going to spend a lot of money on an industry, I should put some money there too. They have more money than I do. They've certainly been more successful than most countries in the world for a while. I'm watching. I'm watching Japan. I wouldn't mind buying some more Japanese shares. I actually own the yen for the first time in a while because there were huge short positions in the yen. I'm looking. There's something else I did recently. I can't think of it at the moment. If I think of it, I'll send you an email.
We'd appreciate it. And I wonder then if you're watching Alibaba, much anticipated IPO expected from China sometime this year.
Well, I'm certainly watching Alibaba. They have done a brilliant job. It would depend on the price and more financial statistics. They were public two or three years ago. I did own it when they were public the last time. So I may buy it again this time if and when they do come public again. Thank you, Chris.
Hey Chris, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. 6 years ago on GoldSeek.com radio, I did my first commentary on how food manufacturers were masking inflation by gradually changing their product packaging to create the illusion of the same amount of food, but in reality, providing less. My wife sent me to the grocery store this week, and on the list was orange juice. We hadn't bought orange juice in a while, so when I looked at the packaging, I noticed that there was no such thing as a half-gallon container or 64 ounces of orange juice. Now there were only 59-ounce containers of orange juice, 7.8% less orange juice per package. And of course, the price was up from where I last remembered it. Every time you see an oddly sized package of food, with volume measurements less than your average 8 ounces, 16 ounces, quart or half gallon, you are seeing the not-so-stealth effects of inflation. After mumbling under my breath about the loss of purchasing power enabled by Greenspan, Bernanke, and soon to be Yellen, I thought more people should be yelling about this progressive erosion of their currency and the not-so-hidden assault on what they are able to purchase with the fruits of their labor, which seem to be caught in a dust bowl of despair, where the fruit is gradually rotting and producing less of a harvest each year. Before checking out at the grocery store, I called the national pizza franchise down the road and thought I'd pick up a pan-style pizza on the way home. They said it would be ready in 15 minutes. According to my watch, I arrived in 17 minutes, and guess what? They had not even started my pizza. The attendant said it would be a few more minutes. After 8 minutes, she informed me they were out of large pan pizza crusts, and would I accept 2 medium pizzas instead? I said sure, and waited another 12 minutes, but did ask why no one called me to tell me they were out of large pan pizza crusts before I drove all the way over. For that matter, when I arrived, they knew my pizza had not even been started. Now they were substituting 2 medium pizzas in its place? The manager of this store, who remained hidden in the back, was apparently so desperate for revenue that he was willing to bait and switch his customers rather than decline the sale. Not only that, he was a coward by putting his service attendants at the counter to suffer the frustrations of customers who had been lied to for a lousy $10 pizza. One would think for the inconvenience that pizza store would have offered a free pizza certificate, breadsticks, or some other consolation. Nothing. This same pizza franchise, where I lived back in the Midwest, would go out of their way to make the customer happy if there were significant delays or shortcomings in service. Not anymore, and certainly not in Nevada. I was hungry now and hurried out when my pizzas were finally ready. Upon arriving at home, I discovered they got me once again. Instead of 2 round medium pan pizzas, they gave me 2 medium square pizzas. The crust was so bulbous on the edges, there wasn't much room for sausage and pepperoni. That did it. I was ticked off. I called them back and complained to the manager and said I was returning the pizzas and wanted round pan pizzas without the bulbous crust. And for the hassle, I requested a certificate for a free pizza. They agreed to replace the pizzas, but refused to give me any kind of consolation for the extreme hassle. When I arrived back at the pizza store, they sent a different attendant out to wait on me at the counter. I asked her why the hassle, why the bait and switch, why the resistance to providing me with some kind of consolation for errors that were clearly of their own making. She told me the manager could not give anything out to make customers happy. I don't know if that was a store policy, a regional policy, or is now a national policy, but it clearly is a horrible policy. I felt sorry for the young lady who had to field my questions and experience my frustration, knowing that she was not empowered to make things right. Then it dawned on me. This attitude, this stinginess, this policy of not enabling frontline personnel to solve basic customer service problems is a direct result of a contracting economy, of inflation, of tight margins, of healthcare mandates, of the institutionalized regulations that slice away the fat, the meat, and the bone of business, causing them to cut the very infrastructure that is required for their survival. This is only going to get worse. It's not just 59-ounce orange juice containers or pizza places that bait and switch and disempower their people to provide basic customer service. It's going to permeate the entire marketplace. The next time you run into a bad customer service situation where the company or franchise has tied the hands of their personnel to respond in a professional manner and solve the problem on the spot, chances are it's a direct result of decades of destructive Fed policy that has finally reared its ugly head in the marketplace. The next time you suffer bad customer service policies related to economic pressure, you shouldn't be yelling at the clerk who is not empowered to help you. If you feel the need to yell, you should be yelling at Yellen. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.